With a name like Ferruccio Dante Michelangelo Benvenuto Busoni, it's no wonder the great pianist and composer brought so much to his music making. From his recital debut at age 8 until his death 50 years later in 1924, Busoni was regarded by his colleagues as a supreme pianist. Today, Busoni is best known for his transcriptions of music by Bach and for a wild two-piano piece called the Fantasia Contrapuntistica. But it was Busoni's elegies for piano that first caught the attention of American pianist Jenny Slotcher.
I can tell you that there was something familiar, synagogal chant, plain song, folk song, a Lutheran hymn, a fragment of Mozart, and that would draw me in to a very rarefied and special world.
He was a pretty amazing human being. I mean, quite the Renaissance man, had these wide-ranging interests. Apparently, he affected a lot of musicians and music critics very deeply when they heard him play. People like Virgil Thompson and Edward Hanslick said they'd never forget it, the experience of hearing him play. Perhaps it's surprising that he played that well and he also composed a lot at the same time. I mean, how much time is there in a day?
Well, George Bernard Shaw has a famous quote that he wrote to Busoni saying, "This is impossible. You cannot possibly compose. To do one thing as well as you do, how can you do another?" And I think Kurt Weill said it best of all. A year after Busoni's death, he eulogized Busoni, and he spoke about how strange it was that such a phenomenon appeared in our time.
Why is his music not more well known by concert-going people today?
I think that it takes time. I think we have yet to discover him. Certainly, Busoni had this reputation of being enigmatic, hard to classify. He was certainly overshadowed by Mahler and even the composers he taught, like Verres, who were highly innovative. Busoni was not radical. He had no revolution. He believed in a systematic progress of work. In other words, as Schoenberg said, there's still a lot to say in C major. And it took people some time to understand the magical quality because there is that phosphorescent glow to much of what he does.
If people do see Busoni's name on a program, they're likely to see Bach / Busoni. And in fact, on your program at the National Gallery in Washington, the transcription of the Bach, the Schackhahn from the Partita No. 2, this is on the program. Let's listen to a little bit so we can talk a little bit about it. Does the magic come through in that transcription, or the historian, or both?
I think both, and I think also Brahms. Brahms was very important for him. And you know, Brahms said, when he heard Busoni, "I am going to do for this boy what Schumann did for me." And so within the Schackhahn, we also hear that massive spacing of the chords, and this was a debt to Brahms. And beyond that, we hear an architect, which I think is wonderful for people to know. He studied architecture in great depth. Many of the times his pieces, he would draw a picture, an architectural rendering of the piece, as in the Great Piano Concerto or the Fantasia Contrapuntistica. Now the Schackhahn, we hear that he conceptualized the space in which it would be performed.
Jenny Slotcher, he also did his own version of Turandot, not having anything to do with Puccini, but his own work based on the play. So this is the fourth elegy. Turandot's intermezzo, or the boudoir of Turandot, is actually the fourth elegy.
Yes, and there's many wonderful stories told about this. I think, you know, when people listen to it, the first thing they want to know is, why is Greensleeves there?
The folk song Greensleeves, yeah.
Right. The stories and the rumors are as many as you can count on nine hands, but the most famous rumor is that he had mistaken it for a Chinese folk song, which we...
Do you believe that?
No, of course, it's not true. And Busoni, he was a great musicologist, as most people know. And he had traveled in England. He knew what Greensleeves was. But for the purpose of the elegy as well as the opera, he was really using the symbolism of the color green for rebirth, regrowth, and renewal.
Does Busoni do this in anywhere else in his music, use color in some kind of creative way?
Yes, very much so. If we listen to the second elegy, All'Italia in Modo Napolitano, it speaks so much of color. If the musician, for instance, if we're looking at the page, every two lines is a sweep of a different color, a different combination of keys, major, minor tonality that's shimmering, and bells are in all of his music. He was fascinated with bells. He designed bells. He was constantly harassing foundries to build a better bell, to make a gong, to do this, to do that. He loved bells because they contained to him the voices of the universe and many keys and instruments sounding at once. So in All'Italia, we hear bells, we hear folk songs woven in, and the color is constantly changing. You feel an almost physical release, relief, and tension with each sweep of the passage of color. That's what I mean by magical. There's always that shimmer, and he's always taking us on a journey.